The Leslie Marshall Show, a true democracy in talk radio. Of, for, and by you, the people.
Yeah, here to set you free, Leslie Marshall. Good evening, America. I'm your host, and this is the only true democracy in talk radio of, for, and by you, the people. We're live nationwide, streaming live at www.lesliemarshallshow.com. In this hour, Mark Levine is my buddy. I'll tell you all about him. And you definitely want to talk to him, host of the Washington, D.C. radio talk show, The Inside Scoop, serving up all the news the government does not want you to know. I'll tell you more about him. We're going to be chatting in this hour, and I hope you'll join us as well. The number to do that, 888-6-LESLIE. 888-653-7543 is the number. On our website, we have a blog. I hope you'll add to the thread of it at LeslieMarshallShow.com. Also at LeslieMarshallShow.com. Answer our opinion poll question. Give your opinion by answering our poll. Yes or no. Nice, simple click. LeslieMarshallShow.com. If you've missed any hour, any night, some of you are watching TV and not giving me your full undivided attention on the program, I'll forgive you this evening. But you can download a free podcast or click on Hear Leslie on the website. Also, if you miss me on TV, I'll be on the O'Reilly Factor tomorrow on Fox News Channel, 8 p.m. Eastern. That's what they say I was on tonight. They moved me. Do you know why they moved me, guys? They didn't think I had enough time. Wasn't that nice? They gave me more time tomorrow than tonight because they were going to be going over election results, which we're going to talk about as well in this hour. Anyway, if you can't see me on the O'Reilly Factor tomorrow, you can check it out on the website, www.lesliemarshallshow.com. All you got to do is click on See Leslie. You can also sign up for our free newsletter on the website. In addition to that, there's a link to my U.S. News and World Report piece on Acorn that was published a couple of weeks ago if you want to check that out. And there's photos, pictures of our great crew, Marky Mark and Chris in the house each and every night, Monday through Friday, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern, as we broadcast live. And you can check out what they look like, the handsome men that I have working for me. Prerequisite to be on the Leslie Marshall Show. And in addition to that, you can also send us an email through there. Become my friend on Facebook. Follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/Leslie Marshall. And I think that's almost everything. Our guest in this hour, Mark Levine, host of the Washington, D.C. radio talk show, The Inside Scoop. He serves up all the news the government does not want you to know. He's an ex-congressional attorney serving the Democrats on the Judiciary and Homeland Security Committees. He is not only able to understand how Washington works, but he can explain it. And I love the way he does. He's passionate. He's a good friend. He sits in for me. He's a regular guest. And he's great at what he does. And I just love him. He has fought some of the greatest battles of the early Bush administration. Remember him? Yeah, he used to be a president here. Anyway, Mark can be heard from his website where he podcasts every day. I hope you'll check that out. That's RadioInsideScoop.com. And we're going to talk about the scoop and the poop and all of the races tonight. Hey, Mark, how are you, sweetheart?
How are you? Hey, Leslie, how are you?
Good. Speaking of cuties, you're a cutie, too.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I've been going up a little bit against your old nemesis, Bill O'Reilly, myself, lately.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know. He's a pussycat, right? He's no big deal.
No, he's all... you know what? People are like, aren't you afraid? I have to admit, the very first time I was on a few years ago, I was nervous. And I basically told his producer, it's my first time, and you know... You got to be gentle with a girl her first time. Well, they laughed, you know, when he told Bill I said that. He was very nice and very respectful. I think the second time I was on, I was pregnant. So I told them, look, I'm pregnant. I'm hormonal. I could just start crying if he attacks me. That was the first two times. I was on a few times after that. And then I didn't do TV for like a year because I was either pregnant, fat, you know, hormonal, breastfeeding, afraid of leaking on national TV, whatever. And now I'm on every week. And I have to say that Bill may disagree with me. But unlike some people who will remain nameless on that network, he's never called me stupid. He has never patronized or demeaned me. I think the most patronized or demeaning thing Bill's ever done, and it cracks me up because I do this. I've done this, I think, with people in real life, and Marky Mark and Chris are probably going to nod. Sometimes when I'm on, and you guys have even seen this, you know, Bill will go, especially when we're alone. You know, Bill, or he's done it when I've been on with other people, but, you know, sometimes he has me on alone. Sometimes he has me on with another liberal or a conservative, et cetera. And, you know, sometimes he'll say, you know, Leslie, blah, 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 go. And it's like, you know, okay, I'm done. You can talk. And, you know, some people have said to me, oh, doesn't that irritate you? And it's like, you know what? It's his show. And that's how nobody's going to interrupt each other. But, you know, he's letting you know. I'm done, because there are times that I've jumped in and thought he was done, and there are times I've just sat there when he was done, and you don't really want any dead air on national television. Did you ever have him do that with you, Mark?
No. I mean, I was there. There was another Democrat on with me, and then there was him, and I didn't really get sort of the full mano a mano that I wanted. I felt like he was giving the other guest all the good meat to chew on, but actually, I have the link on my website so your listeners can check it out and see what they thought. I did think, actually, he was nicer to me than the other time I was on Fox, though, where I'm talking 5 seconds, and they immediately interrupt me, and then I get 4 more seconds, and they immediately interrupt me. It's hello, I mean, can we at least not have equal time? Of course not, but maybe, you know, you've talked to the Republican guest for 90 seconds. Can I get 10 seconds, yeah. Maybe?
Yeah.
But, you know, it is Fox. It is what it is.
No, it is what it is. It's like, you know, McDonald's, you know what you're getting when you go, you know?
Exactly.
And that's it, you know, and people ask me, I mean, I had somebody today send me an email, very long, well-thought-out email, and, you know, which he gives all the arguments for why I shouldn't be on. And I'm just going to be clear, once again, I tell people all the time, one, it is, for 8 years, the highest-ranked news television talk program in the world, not just the United States. And, you know, in what we do, Mark, it's sort of like, you can say anything about me, just spell my name right and put my website down there too nowadays, right? And, you know, it's just such an opportunity. I'm not going to lie. I mean, you know, my website gets thousands of additional hits on top of the, you know, hits it normally gets, you know, whenever I'm on. And for me, it's an opportunity, and I think for you as well, to speak to an audience that normally wouldn't hear us and say, hey, those Democrats aren't drinking Kool-Aid. They are, you know, more rational, and maybe we're not as far apart as I thought. And I get a lot of emails to that effect. So to me, it's a huge opportunity. I mean, one, to be asked to be on national television, you know, I mean, there were years. I've been talking just over 20 years. I've only been doing TV, you know, 5-6 years. You know, I you're a liberal, I'm a liberal. I don't think it's a bad thing, you know, to be on. I don't look at it as going inside the enemy camp. I mean, quite frankly, if a reporter had an opportunity to interview Osama bin Laden, would they do it? Sorry, was I comparing Bill to Osama there? No.
I think you just did. There goes your fox.
No. But what I'm saying is, people are like, it's enemy camp. That's absolutely, you know, ridiculous. Would a conservative go on, or do conservatives go on MSNBC? Yes. And certainly nowhere near the number of people that watch Fox watch MSNBC. And you want to know something? I haven't been on MSNBC in a couple of years, you know, and I am a liberal. So there goes the neighborhood.
I firmly believe we have to talk to each other. I mean, that liberals, conservatives have to talk to each other, talk with independents. There are conservatives that only watch Fox News. There are liberals that only watch MSNBC. And I don't respect either of them, frankly, even the ones on my side, because if you only hear from your own side, you don't develop critical thinking skills.
And this is why we need liberals on Fox and conservatives on MSNBC, dare I say. And that's why we need people like you and I, Leslie Marshall and Mark Levine, on conservative radio stations, as I was for the majority of my career, because basically we need to hear, you know, as radio listeners, and we need to see as radio viewers all sides of an issue, and then go make up our own bloody mind.
Exactly.
So anyway, now that we've had that out, let's talk election. We had big wins in New Jersey and Virginia. Republicans, you know, won that. First and foremost, of course, there are people saying, this is, you know, conservatives showing Democrats, you know, that, you know, people aren't happy with Democrats. This is a message to Obama, et cetera, et cetera. You know, will this shape the 2010 campaign? There's so many things to talk about. What have we learned from today's elections, Mark?
Not much. We'll go through the specifics, because I think each race has its own dynamics. But the general, overall, arching issue is not much. The if the midterms are different from the presidential elections, the off-year elections are really not a bellwether. They never have been. You know, Ronald Reagan, you know, in 81, he did really badly, and then he won in 84. The Democrats lost. Virginia has always gone against the occupant of the White House for the last 25 years. So when Clinton was in office, the Republicans won. When Bush was in office, the Democrats won. Obama's in office. It really doesn't say that much. I actually thought the one most interesting race was up there in your neck of the woods, well, close by your neck of the woods, in the 23rd Congressional District in New York, where you had...
No, I'm in Los Angeles.
Well, but your station's in Buffalo.
My crew, and I have one of my affiliates is WWKB in Buffalo, correct.
Exactly. So many of your listeners, and some of them may live in the district, know that this is a district that parts of it had not voted for a Democrat since 1850. They voted for a Whig more recently than they voted for a Democrat. And that's, of course, because the Republican Party is eating its own. You had the conservative candidate from the conservative party basically weed out the actual Republican candidate who endorsed the Democrat, which makes things very confusing. But basically you have the right-wing conservative part of the Republican Party fighting the moderate New England wing, and that kind of civil war led to a Democrat winning.
Are these states, you know, in Virginia and New Jersey, would these elections gone down the same way if Bush were still president?
I don't know that they would have, but I actually think it's something that's bigger than Obama or Bush. It has to do with the recession, honestly. We are still coming out of tough economic times.
But wait a minute, Mark, I have to know, the recession, I mean, I know it takes some common sense, which not everyone uses, I think everyone has, but how can Democrats in less than 1 year be blamed on something that, you know, a Republican president and his administration, you know, created in 8? Is it because they're not looking at the commander in chief and they're looking at the house, you know, the houses in Congress, or the House and the Senate?
No, I think what it has to do is state politics. See, it's local, but it actually relates to national. Let me explain. States have to balance their budgets. The national government does not. A lot of people don't know that fact. And because states have to balance their budgets and the national government does not, whenever you hit a recession, what happens in both state and federal income taxes is they go down. People are making less, people are unemployed, and spending automatically goes up because you have to pay for unemployment insurance and things like that. That's what happens in a recession. There's a natural deficit increasing measure in a recession. You take less in, you pay more out. Now, states have to balance their budgets, so they have got to punish people in a recession. It's not good, but many of their constitutions require it. Virginia and New Jersey both do. You've got to raise taxes or cut spending. And there's nothing voters hate more than raise taxes and cut spending. The irony is that the stimulus package passed by the Democrats, had it been larger, it actually would have helped the Democrats, because that a lot of that money went to the states. The Republicans, in fact, fought very hard against federal money going to the states. So the Republicans in Congress made life harder for people in New Jersey and Virginia. They took it out against their incumbent governors, and actually the Republicans, by making their own people suffer, won some seats. Irony, but not very pretty.
Most definitely. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with our guests. We're talking the elections and the results, and, you know, certainly we've got spin on the right, we've got spin on the left. Welcome to the No Spin Zone. Oh, I'm sorry. Am I stealing that from someone? I'm Leslie Marshall, our guest Mark Levine, host of the DC radio talk show, The Inside Scoop. We'll be back right after this. We hope you'll join us. Pick up the phone and do so. Maybe you're from Virginia, New Jersey, some of the other states, New York, where we saw some interesting things happen today. A lot of Republicans and conservatives very happy and feel victorious. 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. Streaming live at LeslieMarshallShow.com. Check out the website during the break. Add to the thread of our blog. Sign up for our newsletter. We'll be back right after this. We're talking about the elections that took place in various states in the U.S. of A. The right will tell you one thing, the left will tell you another. Coming from the left, Mark Levine, host of the Washington, D.C. radio talk show, The Inside Scoop, serving up all the news the government does not want you to know, joins us. He's my buddy. He's filled in for me and a regular guest. Mark, thanks for holding, and welcome back. There were a couple of surprises, right, in the elections, 2009, the favorite candidates, Chris Christie, Bob McDonnell, and John Garamendi did not squander their leads in their respective races. Michael Bloomberg had quite a scare in New York City that he survived. Talk to me about that, Mark.
Well, I mean, this is a case where if you ever bought an election, Michael Bloomberg can. He may be the richest man in New York City.
Isn't that what everyone does now, Bison?
Well, yeah, but they usually do it with their own pocket change. I mean, usually you have to raise money to buy an election. He just, takes a few $100 million bills out of his pocket and plops them down on the table, figuratively, of course. Bloomberg's an interesting case because he had ran against term limits. And, of course, he had said that he liked term limits early on and then changed his mind, flip-flopped on it, and, of course, won a third term. So the voters may want to punish him, but when you got that much money, it's kind of hard to run against him.
Exactly. How much time we have, Marky Mark? Oh, okay. I thought he said something something different than that time-wise. And let's talk about New York's 23rd Congressional District, which you did mention before, Democrat Bill Owens. That was the biggest upset of this election, I think, right, Mark, that he pulled off, winning not only the win in upset there, but the traditional Republican stronghold in that 23rd Congressional District in New York.
You know, New York is becoming a very Democratic state. It's the third largest state in the United States. And yet, we have out of the, I think there's now two Republican seats in the entire state. So you have 20-something Democratic seats, maybe it's 30, and two Republicans. It's amazing. And that's, the reason is interesting. It's because the Republican candidate was a moderate. She would have coasted to victory. She supported abortion rights. She supported gay rights. She was a perfect New England Republican, and that drove Rush Limbaugh and the people who control the Republican Party, that is Rush Limbaugh, angry. So they supported this kind of crazy conservative guy who didn't even live in the district and really couldn't answer very many questions on the air. He seemed kind of I don't know, deer in the headlights, but they all supported him, split the Republican Party, the moderate Republican gets kicked out of the race, and lo and behold, she endorses the Democrat. I don't think I've ever seen a time when a Republican in a race has dropped out and endorsed a Democrat before. That's something new in American history.
Yeah, and I'm actually, that was the race where I was happiest that a Democrat won, simply because Republicans were showing that they cared more about conservatives than they cared about their own party. And
that's
certainly
exactly
when
right.
You look at Doug Hoffman, that was about Bible-thumping conservatism.
Exactly. I mean, he didn't even live in the district. He was someone who, I mean, here the mainstream Republican candidate would have coasted to victory, but they decided that they'd rather go down on their very right-wing views than actually have a Republican seat. It tells you a lot
absolutely crazy. Yeah, let's talk more about that. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with our buddy Mark Levine. Join us at 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. Thanks. And we're back. Leslie Marshall here. Welcome or welcome back to the only true democracy in talk radio of four and by you, the people, live nationwide, streaming live at www.lesliemarshallshow.com. Mark Levine is our guest. He hosts a Washington, D.C. radio talk show called The Inside Scoop, serving all the news the government does not want you to know. Check it out. He podcasts live every day from our nation's capital, radioinsidescoop.com. Mark, thanks for holding. Welcome back. You talked about in the last segment or even the first, it's the economy, stupid, right? And, I mean, that seems to be what it is, when it comes to an election on both the state level, whether it's a gubernatorial race or when somebody's looking at a national seat. And that's what we really saw clearly today in a lot of these states, a lot of these districts, a lot of these races.
I think that's true, although I think that, like most elections, it was a combination of things. I do think both the Virginia and the New Jersey Democratic gubernatorial candidates were weak. Here in Virginia, Cree Deeds was notoriously weak. The poor guy has a stammer, which, you know, he's still very smart. He'd be very capable, but it's just not good when you have that as a politician. John Corzine, of course, is an ex-Wall Street exec. That's not particularly good after Wall Street destroys the economy. John Corzine didn't do any of that, but that plus the economy, and as I pointed out, states have to raise taxes and cut their budgets in a recession because they're required to balance their budgets, and because the Democrats couldn't get a big enough stimulus package. The irony is that for all the complaints about government spending, more federal government spending would probably have saved Virginia and New Jersey, but that's the way it is.
Did we also see today that the president's influence in various races, regardless if they're a Democrat or Republican, is quite limited?
Well, yeah, I think people understand the difference between state and federal races. You know, it's one thing to run and help a senator, help a member of Congress. Those are federal positions. The president can help them. They can help him on health care or whatever his agenda is. But, you know, President Obama is not going to have much of effect on a Virginia or New Jersey state house. And, look, there's some truth. I mean, Obama had a little bit of the shine has gone off. I mean, he obviously, any new president has an incredible support for the American public. It usually starts in the 80s. And no president keeps that up in their first year. He's down to the high 50s. He's still very popular. But, you know, the Tea Party people and Fox News bringing them out, they have their weight. I don't think, at the end of the day, this will be remembered much of an election, except on the gay rights issues, where I think you found that in Maine, a very, very close race, very, very disappointed to the gay community. And
I was very surprising in such a state where even the, you know, their two Republican senators are very liberal.
Well, you know, I would look at Maine and Washington State, you know, the two corners of the country, as really bookends here. Here you had two referenda, and I think Maine and Washington are very similar states. They're not the bluest of the blue. I call them indigo states. They're a little bluer than purple. They're not in the middle. They're a little more democratic than the middle, but they're not as democratic as, say, a Massachusetts or a New York or something like that. In any case, it's interesting. They had very, very close races. The Maine race was over marriage. The Washington State race was over what they called everything but marriage. It was a domestic partnership statute that gave gay couples every single right except the name marriage. And what's fascinating, really, is how close they were. In both states, you had 47% of the population willing to give equal rights for gay people, 47% of the population insisting that the gay couples have no rights, and then you had 5%. 5% saying, well, we'll allow domestic partnerships but not marriage. And that was the difference between a victory in Washington State and a loss in Maine.
Yeah, very true. Did we also see today, Mark, and do we see going forward in the future elections that independents have a lot more strength now and going forward?
I think independents have always had strength in American elections. They decide American elections. You never have Republicans or Democrats having the majority. And independents decided this election, but they decided Obama's election, they decided Bush's election. You'd be hard pressed to find an election where independents don't make the difference. The irony is that the independents tend to be the people who are least active in politics and the people who decide at the last minute precisely because they're not partisan one side or the other. But I don't think, though, we should discount that the Democratic Party is still stronger than the Republican Party. At a national level, you will still see Democratic numbers in the high 30s and the Republican numbers in the low 20s. You know, that still gives a good 20-30% independent base to swing an election, but I still think Democrats are up over Republicans. I still think Obama's victory in 08 still has some coattails.
When you talk about Democrats being up over Republicans, some people would say today that incumbents, you need to beware. It's not as you don't have that sort of viewed as a tenured position in a sense as an incumbent that, you know, perhaps you did years ago. Do we as Democrats need to be worried about the House, about the Senate in future elections coming up? And even in the next presidential election, could Obama be a one-term, president if incumbents need to beware based on some of the results today?
Leslie, I think it goes back to the first thing you said in this segment. It's the economy, stupid. If the economy has fully recovered by 2010, if unemployment is going down, if it's clear that Obama and the Democrats have used their stimulus package to help the economy, boom, the Democrats are going to do very well. If the economy is still sluggish, if it's still not coming, if unemployment is still above 9%, yeah, I think the Republicans are going to take a victory. Particularly at the national level, particularly in the midterms, the economy has tremendous weight.
Let's talk about something that made me happy. And I think in that 23rd district in New York, the congressional district, is where we saw it probably the strongest in today's outcome. Issues, Trump, ideology.
The question is, do I think issues Trump ideology?
Well, no, that's something to me that's actually encouraging, that issues Trump ideology, because some of the real, there's some real crazy ideologies out there, especially coming from the right.
Well, it's true. I mean, the 23rd district, I mean, everything was an anomaly in this race. It's a very unusual district. Here you have New York, one of the most Democratic states in the United States. It had three Republican districts. This was one of them. This district hadn't voted for a Democrat since the 1850s, and they would have gone for the Republican, Leslie, if it hadn't been for this crazy revolt in the Republican Party led by Rush Limbaugh and Fox News and Sean Hannity and the Tea Party people against their own Republican candidate. If they'd just gone with the moderate Republican, she would have coaxed to a nice victory, and no one would be talking about New York's 23rd.
Marky Mark has a question for you, Mark. Marky Mark?
Hey, Mark. I know that you you know, follow the races pretty closely. Would you say that as far as the general election and everything like that, it seems to me like, I mean, the perspective of President Obama, if it's going to go up and if it's going to go into the positive, the jobs need to follow with the economy. Sure. And if we agree on that, I mean, how much power does a president truly have to affect that? I'm sure there's something connected. I mean, obviously, President Clinton was very successful, and Leslie, as you've mentioned, bringing, what was it, the highest percentage of Americans out of poverty level, Leslie, I think you've mentioned previously. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think it was. Mark Levine, actually.
Since Lyndon Johnson's Great Society, he did the best.
Yeah, I mean,
Johnson did the best, Clinton did the second best. That's still pretty good.
What do you think as far as that? I mean, how much is really within his hands to do something about that?
There's two main levers of economic policy in America. One is monetary policy, one's fiscal policy. Monetary policy, that's the Federal Reserve. That's lowering interest rates. They've lowered it about as close to zero as you can get. They, if you will, have their pedal to the metal. They can't do anymore, literally cannot do anymore, because you can't lower rates below zero. So that's going full speed ahead. The other thing is fiscal policy. That's government spending. That's, yes, deficit spending. The things that Republicans are complaining about are precisely the things that will help the economy. If the Republicans can slow government spending, that will make the economy worse. That will make unemployment higher. That will make people unhappy, and therefore they'll vote Republican. So you can see that they have a tremendous need now to complain about the deficit. They're never going to complain about the deficit when they're in power, because it's doing things they want them to do, like war and things like that. So what Obama, and it's not just Obama, obviously, it's the Congress. Obama and the Democrats in Congress have to actually spend more, at least till we get out of the recession. Now, once we get out of the recession and we're in good times, then we should run a surplus. I'm not someone who believes in permanent deficits. But in bad times, that's why we need deficit spending. And frankly, Herbert Hoover's biggest mistake in 1929 was to balance the budget. That made the Depression much worse.
We're going to take a break. We'll be back with my buddy Mark Levine, great talk show host. Check out his website, radioinsidescoop.com. I'm Leslie Marshall. Check us out as well, lesliemarshallshow.com. Join us if you have comments about the election, you have questions. I'd love to hear from you, left, right, center, confused, somewhere in between. 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543, streaming live at lesliemarshallshow.com.
Leslie Marshall.
Talking with Mark Levine, host of the Washington, D.C. radio talk show, The Inside Scoop, serving up all the news the government does not want you to know. You can hear his podcast every day at radioinsidescoop.com. Check it out. Mark, thanks for holding. Welcome back. We are talking about the various races, the elections today, the election results. Mark, did today show us that Republicans can win even if they lack a leader, even if their base is cracked?
Well, again, I don't want to hold too much with this election. I mean, locally, sure. I mean, in Virginia, Bob McDonnell had been waiting in the wings a very long time, and the Democratic candidate was weak. It's just very hard to make a national election out of, you know, a few states, Virginia, New Jersey, and New York, the congressional district. I mean, the congressional district really was the only one that was a national race. It was the only federal election on the ballot. And in that one, the Republicans' leader was Rush Limbaugh. He's the guy who led the conservative candidate to a big loss. So I just don't think it tells that much in that score.
What does it also say then? I know, you know, approximately one in four Americans gets their news from a talk show host, and certainly many of those, I hate to say millions of them, get it from Rush. That just goes to show they'll listen to him for entertainment. Maybe they'll even get not facts, but, you know, opinions that they confuse as facts. But when push comes to shove, he really, and people, you know, from the right of that magnitude don't control their vote. Obviously, Obama's president.
Well, you know, particularly even in a district that's run Republican for 150 years. And, of course, if they just listen to you, Leslie, then they would get the facts and not just the rhetoric. So, you know, that's the way to go.
I appreciate that little plug there. Your check's in the mail, my love. you know, 2006, 2008, I mean, you know, both times the Democratic Party captured control of Congress, certainly in 08, captured control of the White House. Are we heading out of a Democratic-friendly political environment?
Midterms are traditionally harsh on the incumbent. I would say that it is likely the Republicans, just everything being equal, it is likely they'll pick up a few seats in 2010. If they only pick up a few seats in the Senate and the House, then I think it's still pretty much a Democratic victory. It's rare just because I think that Americans, and particularly those independents you talked about, Leslie, they don't want to see one party in power for too long. And so when the Republicans were controlling everything, the independents said, well, they're messing it up. Let's give the Democrats a shot. When the Democrats are in control, it's more likely to give the Republicans a shot. So I would say the midterms are the Republicans to lose. But right now, if health care passes, and I think it will, cap and trade passes, and I think it will, if we start getting out of this recession, and I think we are, it's just that jobs is a lagging indicator, unfortunately, that usually takes about a year, I think the Democrats can hold steady in 2010, and I would count that as a victory.
When we look at victory, certainly Barack Obama for us Dems becoming president, that was a big night, and a big night for Democrats, or we could say Americans, but especially Democrats. Some would say tonight was a big night for Republicans. They recaptured, governorships in Virginia, swing state there, and in New Jersey, which is normally a Democratic stronghold. Are we going to see more of the right, really touting that win in New Jersey because of the stronghold?
Well, of course they're going to tout it. That's what they do. They're going to spin it every which way they can. As I said, I think if they'd had a stronger candidate than John Corzine, the Democrats easily could have won in New Jersey. And New Jersey was a squeaker, too. Christie barely won. There was even an independent candidate that took most of his votes from Corzine, about 5%. Actually, the Republican candidate, Christie, did not win a majority in New Jersey. He won about 49% with Corzine at 46, and that minor candidate, that 5%, making the difference in the race. So, it's a good night for Republicans. You can't deny it. But I just wouldn't hold too much stock in it for the future. It's bad for those of us that live in Virginia or New Jersey. But for the rest of the country, I just have to say, depends on the economy.
Most definitely. With the two races in that Democrats took, the vacant congressional seats, what does this do proportion-wise to Congress, or does it not change much at all for those that don't understand numerically what we look at when we're looking at two-thirds majority to avoid a filibuster or override that veto?
They were, of course, House seats. So the Senate stays at its 60. If the Democrats can stay in line, and that includes wayward people like Joe Lieberman or Ben Nelson of Nebraska, and simply vote to allow, for example, the public option in health care to go to the floor. Lieberman's against it. Nelson's against it. But if 60...
Lieberman's become a hardcore Republican. I don't know if he's just been lying all these years or he banged his head somewhere along the way.
I wouldn't call him a hardcore Republican. I think Lieberman actually is pretty much down the center. Here's what I think Lieberman's going to do, and you heard it here first. I think he will vote for what's called cloture. He will vote to allow a vote. He will vote to not filibuster. And you need 60 votes to get the whole thing voted on. And I think Lieberman will be loyal enough to get the thing to the floor. Then when it goes to the floor, he'll vote against it, but that's okay because you only need 50 votes once you get to the actual vote, which is very confusing, but I actually think Lieberman will split the difference, and I think that's generally what he does. I think he splits the difference. A lot of Democrats are angry at him because he certainly is not as loyal to the Democratic Party as hardly any Democrat, but I don't consider him loyal to the Republican Party either. I think he's pretty much disliked by both by both parties.
At this time, he's definitely definitely not a fan. I'm not a fan. I don't think anybody on the left, even on the right nowadays, is a fan.
I was going to say, John McCain was considering choosing Joe Lieberman as his running mate, and the conservatives they revolted, and that's why we got Sarah Palin.
I don't know what's worse. It's totally different. Sarah Palin's a heck of a lot more fun. I want her on some ticket. A lot of fun for us as talk host, as you know, Mark. What do you think we learned about politics today and the priorities of the people voting in the handful of races across the country?
Oh, I don't know. It's so hard to give a national answer to these local races. I think what we learned is that voters are fickle, but we've known that for some time, that they're ready to jump on incumbents in hard economic times, but again, we've known that for some time, and that America is still pretty much a deeply divided country with strong feelings on both sides. But at the end of the day, I think most people recognize that President Obama has only been there 1 year, and they're going to give him a little bit more time before they judge him.
I You would not know that by, you know, listening to some of the people watching us on Fox News Channel when we're on O'Reilly and other programs on that network, or so much of the, quote, conservative media out there. You know, what are Republicans or Democrats going to, you know, learn today ahead of the midterm elections in 2010? And you know, this is actually what I want to ask you, Mark. Is at that point, because there is, some people would say, at the midterm election point of 2010, more time, or enough time certainly for judgment, because we are fickle and we're quick to judge. Is Obama's prestige going to be put to the test across the country in the midterm elections of 2010?
Oh, I think so. I think 2010 will be a fair indication of what people think of the president. Whereas I don't think this election, really, it's fair to blame or to credit President Obama. I do think 2010 is fair. It is a national election. It is every seat in the House and a third of the Senate. It is some 37 governorships. That is often a referendum on the president, just as in 2006, when the Democrats won a lot, it was a referendum on George Bush, a negative referendum. The same is true with Bill Clinton in 94. I mean, the Republicans won the House in 94. And won the Senate, and that was a clear negative view on Bill Clinton. So, no, I think midterms are fair to judge the president. I'm just not so sure these off-year elections are.
I appreciate that. Mark's going to stay with us into the next hour. We'll take some more phone calls if you have something to say at 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. We can talk some more election, and what else are we going to talk about? Well, stick around. You will just have to find out. In the meantime, do check out Mark's website, please, where he broadcasts every day. He podcasts at RadioInsideScoop.com. Check it out. Check him out and all he's done. He has a very extensive background in politics, in law, and has even fought in some of those great battles of the early Bush administration. Check it out, RadioInsideScoop.com. And check out our website as well, LeslieMarshallShow.com. I am she, your host, Mark Levine, my buddy. We'll stick around in Hour 3, and I hope you'll be joining us at 888-6-LESLIE.
You're listening to The Leslie Marshall Show. Truth for all sides of the spectrum. Give her a call now at 888-6-LESLIE.
In this hour, joining me from last hour, my buddy Mark Levine, great host out of Washington, D.C., serving up all the dirt in D.C. The government does not want you to know. We certainly want you to join us at 888-6-LESLIE. We were talking elections last hour, a little bit of that. And in this hour, we'll also talk health care reform, and we'll talk about the gay marriage issues in the states of Maine, not really gay marriage, but some gay issues in the state of Washington. And I certainly hope you'll be joining us. 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. Mark Levine, as I said, is our guest in this hour. Mark, thanks for holding, and welcome back in this hour. We have some calls we didn't get to last hour, so let's get to those. 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. Mark, thanks for holding, and let's start it out with Jason in Long Island. Hi, Jason. Good evening.
Good evening. How are you?
Good, thank you.
That's good. I have a question and a statement.
Okay, sounds good.
The question is about the New York gubernatorial race being dependent on Corzine losing yesterday.
Okay.
And then the question is this going to have any bearing on Giuliani's chances in New York? Please
tell
me.
That's a good question. Mark, what do you say?
You know, I don't know. I mean, you're a New Yorker. I'm not. Do New Yorkers ever listen to what people from New Jersey say? I don't think so. I thought they listened to people from New Jersey. I honestly think they're two very different states. I do think Patterson's a weak candidate. As we've learned, weak candidates often lose. That's really the problem. It's not that Giuliani's so strong. It's that Patterson's so weak. Frankly, if Elliot Spitzer hadn't had a certain tryst with a certain prostitute, he'd be,
right,
I think, a cleanly winning re-election without a
problem. Yeah, absolutely. I agree at that.
He was a strong candidate.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think Cuomo would beat Giuliani anyway, because I don't think Patterson.
Probably. I just think Patterson's weak, which is why, actually, President Obama was trying to get him out of the race, which I think Patterson did not appreciate very much.
Right.
All right, anything else? Jason, did you want to comment more on the elections? Anything to say on health care and AARP, you know, backing a reform in this plan, or some of the gay marriage initiative that actually lost, like in the state of Maine?
Well, I wanted to make a statement about the Tea Party kind of crowd that shows up at the healthcare meetings,
yeah,
the town hall meetings. I went to one of those, In Long Island, Steve Israel held one about a month ago.
Yep.
And I had only really seen it on, you know, certain various clips. And it made me want to go that much more because I feel like I keep hearing that we need to take the high road with these people. And I really wanted to just get down in the trenches. And I pretty much did. I got personally in a shouting match with about 50 angry teabaggers.
That's awesome.
I'll tell you, you know, I think the best way to deal with it, frankly, is the way my former boss did. I used to work for Congressman Barney Frank. And I don't know if you've seen that wonderful town hall meeting where the woman basically accuses President Obama of being a Nazi.
Yep.
And he said, arguing with you is like arguing with a dining room table.
Dining room table.
Right. And, you know, look, if someone raises a serious question on health care, how much is it going to cost? Who's it going to cover? Will it lead to the deficit? Then absolutely a member of Congress should answer that question. But if someone compares the president to the Nazi, the best way to respond is simply by mockery. And I think that Barney Frank did a terrific job, and that's the way to go. So if you got down in the trenches with people who weren't respected, the Steve Israel, good for you.
Marky Mark has that clip, Mark and Jason. I think we should play that. Mark, do you have it ready?
Why do you continue to support a Nazi policy as Obama has expressly supported this policy? Why are you supporting it?
A
real solution.
When you ask me that question, I am going to revert to my ethnic heritage and answer your question with a question. On what planet do you spend most of your time? Do you want me to answer the question? Yes. As you stand there with a picture of the president, the face to look like Hitler, and compare the effort to increase health care to the Nazis, my answer to you is, as I said before, it is a tribute to the First Amendment that this kind of vile, contemptible nonsense is so freely propagated. Ma'am, trying to have a conversation with you would be like trying to argue with a dining room table. I have no interest in doing it.
And you know what? I have to say, for those of us that have argued with dining room tables, because, I mean, I debate a lot of conservatives on television, and some of them are like dining room tables. That's just such a great quote. Jason, glad you brought that up. There you go. Thanks,
Mark,
for having it. Anything else, Jason, that you wanted to say regarding these issues?
Well, I mean, it's just that these people would show up at the rally really angry, ready to, you know, shout people down. But then as Steve Israel got going on his explanations, people are going, yeah, oh, yeah. And they got quieter and quieter as they started to listen more because he backs the public option. It's not for single payer.
Yeah.
And so this started to seem reasonable to people.
And
by the end of it, they were like, oh.
Well, isn't it interesting, guys? Isn't it interesting how reasonable people get when they have facts and they start to think for themselves? Because how many people out there are screaming, blah, 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 healthcare reform, and then you're like, no, public option is not single payer. Public option is not. And when somebody takes the time to listen or to go look it up for themselves, God forbid, you know what I mean? They're you know, a lot of them see the errors of their ways. I mean, regardless of what they support. And, you know, just listening to the lies that they're being fed, you know, whether it's Sean Hannity, Glenn Beck, Rush Limbaugh, et cetera. You know, and also, you know, I've seen a lot of these, you know, I've been on different networks. I was on Fox Business Channel one of the days of the Tea Party, and the guy's standing there, and the people behind him are screaming about things that even the creators of the Tea Party claim the Tea Party wasn't about. It wasn't an anti-Obama demonstration. Well, if it wasn't, then how come all the signs were anti-Obama?
Yeah, Leslie, I think that the people who attend the Tea Parties have, most of them, have a definite agenda. And the agenda is not political discourse. The agenda is precisely to shout down the speaker, to not let them speak, because they know that if the members of Congress can actually explain what they're doing, like you said, it'll sound
reasonable.
It's
a circus. It's a circus. And you know what it is? There's a lot of people out of work, otherwise you wouldn't see as many people at these things. I mean,
there weren't that many people. You know, the Gay Rights March in Washington, D.C. had twice as many people as all the teabag marches all across the country. They had about 75,000 everywhere. They didn't have to come to Washington. They could just roll out of bed. bed and go to their local match, you know, and there was about 150,000 people marching for gay rights in D.C. coming from Alaska and all across the country. So, but, you know, that didn't get that much press.
All right, Jason, anything else, sweetie?
One quick comment about Maine. Okay. Yeah, it didn't work this time, but Maine will come around, I think, because Maine is kind of like the south of the north. And yeah. I think it's just going to take a little longer for people to get used to the idea.
Jason, you sound relatively young. May I guess that you're under 30? Is that right?
I'm 32, actually.
Oh, okay, 32. Close enough. Here's what the polls show. If you're under 35, more than two-thirds, and frankly, if you're under 25, it's more than three-quarters, of people in that age bracket strongly support equal rights for gay people. It's just not an issue for them. People over 60, people over 70, there you find 90-10 against gay rights. It's only a matter of time. You know, the fact that
is it the word, Mark, that they you know, I mean, you know, if it wasn't, quote, marriage, if it was called union, I mean, is it the word marriage you think everybody's hung up on? I mean, because this to me is like so ridiculous. People are dying from genocide in Darfur. We're seeing the Taliban, you know, winning, unfortunately, it seems, in Afghanistan. Pakistan has a heck of a time holding back terrorists. We have crazy people running North Korea and Iran. I mean, I can just go on and on, and then just look at all the domestic issues. Who cares if two guys and two girls want to get married? 54% of heterosexuals' marriages end in divorce. If it's so great and we can't get it right, why not let somebody else try? I just don't get this.
I actually think that the word marriage is worth 5%. Again, it's the difference between Washington State and Maine. I think the demographics of Washington State and Maine are very similar. They're both indigo states. They're both bluish states, but not hardcore blue states. And they had an identical referendum, except that in Maine they called it marriage. In Washington they called it domestic partnerships. In both cases, you had 47 for and 47 against, and that 5% in the middle, yeah, they care about the word marriage. But it's the cusp of change, and every year there are going to be more and more states. And frankly, I think New York and New Jersey and the District of Columbia, where I've been working very hard, are going to have marriage equality. I predict at least two out of three of those by end of this year.
All right, Jason, anything else, dear?
Just that your show rocks and keep it up. I have to go back to work.
All right, thank you. Yeah, Jason, go make some money, man, okay? A man with a job, that's sexy. Thank you for the call, Jason. We'll be back. I'm Leslie Marshall. Mark Levine's my buddy. He's in the house tonight. If you're holding, hang tight. Coming to your calls right after this. Quick break. We will be back to your calls. If you're not holding yet, pick up the phone and join us. We're talking about the election today. What do you think about it? Did you even know there was one? Some people like Leslie's World Series on, please. 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. Marky Mark, by the way, during the break, I got a message from my cousin, and he's like, so sorry, I've been busy. I haven't been able to talk to you. I'm sitting in a box at the Yankees game right now. 888-6-LESLIE. 888-653-7543 is the number. My buddy Mark Levine. Well, I'm evil. I'm evil. I know I'm evil. We'll be back. And we're back. Leslie Marshall here. Welcome and welcome back to the only true democracy in talk radio of, for, and by you, the people, live nationwide, streaming live at www.lesliemarshallshow.com. Mark Levine, host of the Washington, D.C. radio talk show, The Inside Scoop, serving up all the news the government does not want you to know. He can be heard every day where he podcasts at RadioInsideScoop.com. Good friend of mine, good friend of the show, fills in for me. He's great, seen on radio and TV. We have the same publicist now, right, Mark?
Is that our little secret?
No, I don't think it's
everybody.
It's not a secret, is it?
Okay. It's because she's treated you so well that I like her so much.
No, she's great. She rocks. She totally
she is
rocks.
Great.
Even though I did catch something from her through the email, I said to her, "How did I get a sore throat and cough and whatnot when I talked to you on the phone through email? I haven't seen her in person because she's in Atlanta. I'm in LA." But anyway, let's talk. Speaking of sick, let's talk some healthcare. Let's continue with our calls. Let's talk more. Election, healthcare, and gay marriage, specifically in the state of Maine, and the defeat there. 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. Mike in Westchester, where are you? Give us a buzz. It was your turn, baby. We go to Don in Buffalo next. Hi, Don. Good evening. How are you?
Good evening. Excuse me. Good evening, Leslie. Hello, Mr. Levine.
Hello.
I wanted to ask, you're both, bona fide members of the Democratic Party.
We have D's branded on our chest.
It's true. I admit it.
Since birth.
So why is it that when there's a Republican who does everything that, well, I just to sum it up, a Republican who's just a Republican by name, namely McCain, Lindsey, Amnesty Graham, Schwarzenegger, Bloomberg, and this Scavanavali, I can't pronounce the name, the lady from District 23, if I'm mistaken here. They are always considered moderates. And yet, if you have someone like Lieberman and others, Democrats, who at times go along with the Republicans, they're considered traitors. I mean, I listen to all the talk show hosts, both the left and the right, and especially on the left. Once you have a Democrat who works with Republicans, who agree with Republicans, whether it's most of the time or sometime, they're considered traitors. But when Republicans do it, they're considered moderates.
Well, I think you'll see the exact flip side from conservatives, mm-hmm. right? You'll find that Rush Limbaugh will call a lot of the people that you just mentioned traitors. I don't think there's any way you can call John McCain a Democrat by any stretch of the word. He's not the furthest right-wing Republican out there, but he's firmly a conservative. Now, you take someone like Michael Bloomberg, okay, now there's a guy who I think could be comfortable in either party. But no, I think it happens the same way. Republicans will call Joe Lieberman a moderate, and instead of a Democrat, moderate Democrat, and they'll call just like you did. They'll call John McCain a traitor.
Limbaugh
and those
another,
on the left will do the exact same thing with those in our party.
Yeah, and they said, listen, she's even more liberal than the Democrat Owens who won. And I don't think he's sort of moderate, some little bit I've heard of him.
Well, he has to be. You have to understand, New York has 29 congressional districts. Right now, two are held by Republicans. 27 are held by Democrats. The one that Bill Owens won is one of the most Republican districts in New York. In fact, as I mentioned, they voted for a Whig in 1854 more recently than they voted for a Democrat in 1850. It's a very, very conservative district in the state of New York. And you got to be to win there. It's,
well,
you know, that's the reason why a Texas Democrat is more conservative than a Massachusetts Republican.
Yeah, but you had a moderate Republican, by your terms, moderate Republican, who was there. Now he's Secretary of the Army, if I'm not mistaken, right? So, you know, here in Buffalo, you know what's interesting? For the past 40 years, they've voted Democrat all the time, just like the folks in District 23 voted for Republicans all the time. And, you know, Buffalo is still one of the poorest and less developed cities of all in America. I would say there's really time for change, and because both parties have been screwing us left, right, and center. So
wasn't Jack Kemp from Buffalo? Wasn't he a Republican? I don't think Buffalo's always a Democrat.
Hmm? Pardon me?
Jack Kemp, a very, very famous Republican congressman from Buffalo. Yes. I don't think Buffalo's always gone for the Democrats, and I'm not from there.
No, and Jack Kemp was a more moderate Republican. I actually liked Jack Kemp a lot. I really did.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I think Buffalo's in the middle, and so they go for people in the middle, moderate Republicans or moderate Democrats.
Yeah, well, I guess so. But it's kind of unfair when you would say that those, you know, Tea Party people, you know, I mean, these are people like myself, independents out there, who unfortunately don't have a say. We are being almost forced to join a party just to make the decision who will run either as a Democrat or Republican. And that's why we ended up with John McCain, and that's why we ended up with Obama. And as I said to Leslie just the other day.
Who did you like?
You know, and I think that it's about time that we...
Don, Mark asked you, who did you like?
You don't like John McCain, you didn't like Obama. Who would you have wanted to be president of the United States, Don?
Well, who I want to? I'll keep that close to my chest for the time being. I mean, casting my ballots, I mean...
Why don't you say? Why don't you say, Don? You can tell who
you
vote
like
for. It's 2009.
Don, it's easy to complain about incumbents. Now, listen, I'm not going to defend every member of Congress. The government makes lots of mistakes.
Mark, we have 30 seconds, so hang on. Don, I'll let you hang on so you can respond to what Mark has to say. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back. Mark Levine's our guest. Don's on hold. If you want to join us, please do. 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. Moving from elections into what happened in Maine today on election, and AARP backing the Democrats' health care bill. We'll be back. we're back. Leslie Marshall here. My guest is Mark Levine, host of the Washington, D.C. radio talk show, The Inside Scoop, serving up all the news the government does not want you to know. He's an ex-congressional attorney serving the Democrats on the Judiciary and Homeland Security Committees. Not only able to understand and explain how Washington really works, he actually fought in some of the great battles of the early Bush administration. He can be heard from his website, where he podcasts a talk show every single day, RadioInsideScoop.com. Mark, thanks for holding. Welcome back. He's also a good friend of mine personally, professionally, a great regular guest on the program, and he sits in for me. And remember, this talk show is like my baby, you know, so it's sort of like, you know, I let him drive my Ferrari, so to speak. 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. I trust him. I trust his judgment, his opinions, and his knowledge on the issues. We're talking the elections. We're talking health care, specifically the AARP backing the Democratic health bill, and also what happened in Maine with gay marriage. Mark, good evening again, sweetie. Thanks for holding and welcome back. Let's go back to Don in Buffalo. I know you wanted to respond to what he said before the break.
Well, I just think it's very easy to carbon criticize the government. It's very easy to say they're doing something wrong. It's very easy to complain. And if you have a better idea, if you've got a better solution, if you've got a better candidate, then by all means complain. It's your First Amendment right. But if you're only going to complain, you're not going to propose an alternative, I just think it's a little bit too easy. And that's why I was asking.
I'm with you there, Mark. I'm with you on that.
Well, if you insist, if you really insist, I like to run Paul. He was the only guy who really, you know, did basically.
But he won't win.
I knew he wouldn't win. Unfortunately,
he won't. And I'll tell you why.
Like J.C. Watts.
I think that Ron Paul has a very, very limited view of government. If Ron Paul were in charge now, we would be in a Great Depression, far greater than we ever were before, because, as I said an hour ago, if you were listening, in hard economic times, that's when the government should be spending to help get us out. You know, Herbert Hoover didn't spend in the 1929, and that's how the Great Depression happened. So Ron Paul doesn't believe in government spending ever. I swear, I don't know how he gets to the Capitol in the morning. He has to go on a publicly financed road. Really, he should build his own road to get there. I mean, I think he's a bit of an extremist myself. He's a nice man. I mean, I've met him.
But whether you like him or not, there is a reality, and the reality is he's not going to win.
Yeah, well,
he's not going to. It's just not just him. I mean, Ralph Nader, et cetera. There are a lot of people that support people like that, civil libertarians. They just, their candidates don't garner enough votes to win. And I'm not saying, hey, it's your right, like Mark said, it's your constitutional right.
Don, I respect that you gave me a name, and I appreciate that.
Yes.
Because I think you got to take a stand sometime. And if you support Ron Paul, go out and work for Ron Paul. That's what America's all about.
Well, as I said, there are a couple of names I can give you, and that's one of the guys I thought of. You know, J.C. Watts, Harold Ford Jr., if he threw his hat in the ring.
J.C. Watts. Yeah. Talk to me about J.C. Watts, Mark. That's scary to me. That's scarier than Ron Paul.
Well, I don't know what he's doing now. He's hasn't been in Congress for a while. Is he running somewhere now? I'm not following that. Is he back?
I think he's a lobbyist now, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, that I knew. I mean, he was the one black Republican for a number of years, and then he did what most Republicans do, cash in, use their influence, and make a lot of money lobbying members of Congress. I mean, and he's you're a big fan of big lobbyists? I wouldn't think that Ron Paul would appreciate that.
Yeah, well, okay. Well, thank you all for my...
Sorry.
He's going to step out on that note. Yes, he's going to step out on that note. Oh, okay. Anything else to say about the elections, Mark, before we move on to the Democratic health bill getting the backing of the AARP?
At some point, if there's a chance, I just want to talk about what I'm doing in D.C. with regard to marriage equality, because I've been kind of proud of that.
Can we do health care and then get
sure.
to that?
Let's do health care first, because that's actually a very big story.
Let me ask you, some people are saying this is a coup for House Democrats, AAP endorsing the sweeping health care overhaul legislation. Is it a coup because sometimes you have organizations like this or the AMA or a group of doctors or whatever backing? But then the bottom line is you have Blue Dog Democrats and Republicans on the airwaves, lying and twisting and screwing with the constituents' mindset. And, certainly, as you mentioned, the voters are fickle. So is this backing truly a coup for the House Democrats, or does it just look good on paper but doesn't necessarily translate to votes?
I think it's a major coup. I would argue that there are the two most effective lobbies of all the lobbies, and then there are thousands of them on K Street, just down the street from me. Of the two most effective lobbies, one is the NRA, the National Rifle Association. The other is AARP. AARP has tremendous weight. Virtually everyone over 50 gets their packages. They have a lot of money to throw around, and frankly, seniors are malleable, and they don't trust either party, but a lot of them trust the AARP. I think this is the difference. I think AARP, frankly, was sitting and waiting to see if health care had a chance at passage. I know myself, I was working on the public option personally, and I talked with some AARP representatives, and they, I think, were waiting to see if it had a chance, and now that it does have a chance, they're jumping on board. They are going to provide the difference. Yes, I think, and maybe you heard it here first, there will be a health care bill. It will pass, and there will be a public option in it. Now, how strong it'll be, that's still to be negotiated. But yes, AARP is a major, major player on the Hill.
And AAP is a major player because the majority of the population are headed to, if they not aren't already over 50, because people forget AARP is 50 plus. It's not the senior level of Medicare recipients.
And seniors vote. I mean, if there's one thing to be learned
absolutely
about off your elections, is that that army of young people that was the largest young people voting, 18 to 30, ever in American history, they're the ones who put President Obama in office, and they didn't come out and vote this year.
That's what I was going to say. The minorities didn't come out as big in numbers. Women didn't come out as big. So, yeah.
But your grandmother will always vote, I assure you. She'll get out of her wheelchair. She will vote. She always does.
And not only, and why do you think that is? Is it because they have the time? Is it because they're older and they're old school?
I think part of it is that they have more time on their hands. They're not, you know, as busy in college or I mean, you know, the system actually is very hard, particularly on college students, because they make it very, very hard for you to vote. Do you vote absentee in your home state? They make that very difficult. There's actually new legislation that makes you show your ID. So it's very hard on college students. Basically, people in their 20s move a lot. They move from place to place. They're finding their jobs. They're getting married. And every time you move, you have to re-register. So I think it's harder. I also think that, frankly, that, yeah, people who are in their 60s and 70s have been around the block a long time. They know that their votes matter. They've seen presidents come and go, and they know that they actually do have power. And young people are probably thinking about other things. But I'll tell you this. Young people proved me wrong last year in electing President Obama. I'm very glad to see it. And now those of us that really want to increase youth voting, which I do, now need to encourage them to come out not every 4 years, but every year.
most definitely. This is a 10-year, $1.2 trillion bill in the House. Why is this a tricky move for AARP, Mark? Because that's what everybody's saying today.
Well, it's tricky because AARP has their own insurance plans. And some people are saying they have a conflict of interest.
AARP, for many, is a secondary insurance to Medicare being a primary.
That's exactly right. So, and in fact, I give them a lot of credit because I think AARP is actually putting its members' interests ahead of its own interests, and that's very rare for any organization. AARP sells these insurance plans. They make a lot of money selling these insurance plans. Their insurance plans may well be hurt by the deal. How often do you see an organization actually going against their own interests? But I think it's in the interest of their members because it will make health care cheaper for everyone. It'll make Medicare stronger. It'll make really pretty much everyone except the health insurance companies better off. And so I give AARP a lot of credit. It was a bold move.
Absolutely a bold move. Floor votes on the House bill are going to come as early as this weekend.
It may happen Saturday.
Right.
We may do it Saturday.
And when Steny Hoyer was asked today if the Dems have the 208 needed, he said, we're counting. I mean, how close are we looking at for 218 here?
Oh, we'll get it. I think they're probably 212, 213. They're going to twist a few arms. They're going to say, oh, you want to write a little section of the bill? Okay. Oh, what's your problem with it? Oh, okay. Well, how about if we put this health care center in your home state? Oh, okay. All right. We got you on board. This is where legislation gets a little ugly when you look at it up close. But I am confident that Steny Hoyer knows how to count votes. I'm confident we'll get 218. And then we'll move on to the Senate, where I think Harry Reid, while he did a very good job at endorsing the public option, he said something that was really not very smart a few days ago. I don't know if you heard. He said, well, we may not get it done this year. Whether true or not, it was not a good thing to say. You've got to keep the momentum up. I think it can be done this year, and I don't think Harry Reid should even suggest that it can't be done this year, because a lot of times when you do that, no, that happens.
Yeah, yeah, you speak it into it, you speak it into existence. You know, AARP, let's take a break, and we'll talk more about AARP backing the Democratic health bill. The American Association of Retired Persons. We'll be back with Mark Levine. I'm Leslie Marshall. The two of us are still working hard. We're not old enough yet to be AARP members. And we're certainly not old enough to be retired yet. But, man, it would be nice, wouldn't it, Mark, to have, you know, the luxury to just sit back and, you know, relax. We'll take a break. We'll be back. I'm Leslie Marshall. I guess Mark Levine. If you want to join us, 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543, streaming live at LeslieMarshallShow.com.
Leslie Marshall. Real people. Real life. Real talk. Give her a call.
And we're back. Mark Levine, host of the DC radio talk show, The Inside Scoop. You can hear it every day on his website where he podcasts from at RadioInsideScoop.com. He's my guest, good friend. Mark, thanks for holding, and welcome back. I wanted to ask you, before we get to Maine and the gay marriage legislation, or, you know, overruling of that appeal of that vote. When President Bush, when George W. Bush was president, and he pushed the Medicare prescription drug benefit through a very closely divided Congress back in 2003, was the AARP endorsement at that time critical for that? And can we correlate that with how critical this is right now for health care?
I think we can. I mean, that's a case where the Republicans had an idea, and frankly, I don't think that was a good bill. I mean, I'm all for helping seniors, but basically that was a bill that transferred a lot of taxpayer wealth directly to the health insurance companies, and they got a lot more out of it than seniors did. But the AARP, yes, their support was critical. I don't know if it would have passed without their support. They're a very powerful, effective lobby, and I say that really as a compliment to them. You know, I agree with them sometimes. I don't agree with them other times, but they are very effective.
I don't understand so many people getting upset about the, you know, the latest move, which really is a crackdown and a slam to the private insurance companies, which, you know, have more money than God. I mean, because under this bill, insurance companies would have to publicly disclose the justification for premium increases before they go into effect. You would think Democrat or Republican, everybody would be like, woohoo on that.
Well, Republicans, remember, follow their leader, Rush Limbaugh. They want Obama to fail. No, they do. They know
Kyle Rush,
would
right?
be the most major reform ever in American history. Teddy Roosevelt, 100 years ago, first tried health care insurance reform. He failed. Franklin Roosevelt failed. Truman failed. Bill Clinton failed. Eisenhower failed. You name it, this would be the first major reform of health care in American history. It'll be a tremendous success. It'll help a lot of people, save a lot of money. And so Republicans have to kill it. That simple. They don't care what happens to the
American
people.
And it's not just – no, it's a very good point, because then also it's a very big success for Barack Obama, and they
exactly.
definitely
and
don't want that.
And the other thing about it is it's going to take some time to implement it all. So they're going to go into the 2010 elections. You bet. They're going to say, well, look, it hasn't done anything yet, because it's a major overhaul. Some changes don't even happen until 2013. And so they're going to say, look, it hasn't done anything yet. They did the exact same thing when Social Security started and when Medicare started. Both of them, they said 2 years into it, it hasn't done anything, and they won some seats. And then by the time 4 years kicked in, people liked it, and you don't hear many Republicans today saying we have to abolish Social Security or Medicare. This is
That's
like
what
that.
I was saying. When everybody talks about social programs or the government running any kind of health care program, I just don't see people going, I don't want Medicare. Thank you very much. Thank you, but keep it. Everybody takes advantage of
94%.
It because people paid into it.
94% of people on Medicare like the program and are satisfied with it. I can't think of anything else in America that 94% of people agree on. Anything. 94%. That's an incredible approval statistic. And frankly, what I'd like to see, and what the single-payer system is basically Medicare for all, because if those of us younger than 65 could join into Medicare, we could help its fiscal solvency, because, heck, we're healthier than people in their 70s, and that would make Medicare stronger, and I'd get cheaper health care, because my Blue Cross Blue Shield just doubled my insurance. And they have
yeah, Blue Cross keeps going on. I mean, it's just ridiculous. I want that justification, because I'm just like, wait a minute. It hasn't even been 30. What the hell happened? You know what I mean? That it could go up that much. You know, it's absolutely.
They're raising it because they know that they're going to get whacked by the taxpayers soon, so they want to milk every last cent of it. Seriously, I just got something in the mail. They're raising my rates 30% in a month, which will be a total of doubled over the last 3 years, and I'm pretty healthy.
Yeah. Oh, I'm glad to hear that. I'm really glad to hear that.
Yeah, I am too. It's like, why am I paying all this medical insurance? I can't wait to use the public option the moment I can.
Let's talk gay marriage, and let's go ahead, Marky Mark.
Mark, I actually had a quick question about that. Now, I've heard different versions where you could only use the public option if you couldn't get it through your work or if you couldn't afford it. The one that that they're going through now, Harry Reid introduced, is that one that, like, you know, anybody could they go from their work, or if they were paying on their own, could they go from that to the public option if they wanted?
The answer, Mark, is it depends on which bill. Well, there's going to be a House bill. There's going to be a Senate bill right now that Reid is putting together, two Senate committee bills. Then they're going to go together in a conference bill. That's one of those details that has yet to be decided. So if you want it one way or the other, this is a great time to call your member of Congress, because I think there will be a public option, but that detail, whether you can join it or whether you can only join it if you don't get it through your employer, that's one of those things they have yet to decide. I think everyone should be able to join it, because that's what keeps prices down.
Exactly. But, that's why I want – exactly. That's the whole reason, too.
So I would say, Mark, call your member of Congress and insist on that, because that's one of those details that's still yet to be decided.
Perfect. Thank you.
Let's talk about gay marriage in Maine.
Can we call it marriage equality?
Marriage equality, sure.
I'll tell you why. Because when you call it gay marriage, people think, oh, it's gay marriage, as if that's any different from anyone else's marriage.
No, but that's what people call the vote. You know that. That's what people refer to it as. But that's fine, okay?
Yeah, but you know, words matter. I mean,
Words do matter, but the reality is 53% of the voters chose to overturn the law, and that law would legally allow for gay people to be married in the state of Maine. It certainly dealt a blow to the gay right activists, to the gay community. It certainly came as a bit of a shock, especially for people in the New England area, because I think most people would agree that New England's one of, if not, you know, second to the West Coast, the most gay couple-friendly region in the nation.
Sure.
And if the law was affirmed, it would have marked the first time that the electorate in any state supported gay marriage. There are many people, gay or straight, that are appalled. My question to you, Mark, is, I know people quote the Bible and what it says about homosexuality, but when we look at our Constitution, doesn't the Constitution say that all men were created equal, and aren't laws supposed to be, you know, litigious and not biblical and moral, if you will? I mean, marriage is, although it can be a holy union for people that get married in the church, etc., no marriage in the United States is considered legally binding unless you have a state license. And I don't like – this is a direct conflict of separation of church and state, in my opinion.
Yeah, marriage is a civil right. There are such things as religious marriages. No one has ever tried to require the Catholic Church to marry non-Catholics or anything like that, or to marry gay people. But marriage is a civil right. And I agree with you, Leslie. I think the federal Constitution says two things. The First Amendment says Congress shouldn't establish a religion. And the 14th Amendment says we have equal protection under the laws. In my humble opinion, the Constitution requires marriage equality. And in fact, there's a very famous case that David Boies is taking up right now to argue that point. But, you know, as much as I think the Constitution says what it says, we got 9 justices, 5 at least are very conservative, and, you know, they get the final word on the matter, not me. So I agree with you. I think it is required. And we got to remember that blacks did not get civil rights through the ballot box. They got it through the courts. 1954, Brown versus Board of Education, the majority in Alabama voted for Jim Crow laws and would still, in the 1960s, have voted for Jim Crow laws. The sad thing is, whenever you have a referendum on minority rights, the majority almost always votes against the minority. They say, well, it doesn't affect me, so screw them. I don't like gay people. Screw them. I don't like black people. And one of the big things we were doing in D.C. that I'm very proud of in the District of Columbia is we defeated a referendum, not at the ballot box, but by arguing you can't vote on someone else's civil rights. And I'm very proud that there will not be a referendum or initiative in District of Columbia on the matter. There will be marriage equality by the end of the year.
I'm happy about that as well. Mark, you know I love you. Thank you for being with me tonight on World Series night, being my baseball pal. Mark Levine,
Leslie.
I love you too, sweetie. I'm Leslie Marshall. We'll be back tomorrow. Marky, Mark, and Chris, thank you. Good evening, America.